welcome back to another episode of the FNF podcast. This week we're just going to be having a general chat about all things football, more just because we miss each other than anything really, and we just wanted to catch up. As ever, I'm joined by Alex Forder. Where are you today, Alex? How are you?
I'm okay, and I'm at the LA Galaxy Stadium behind me. For the reason of we've just let Jonathan Bond go there, and I saw him in the best 11 of English players abroad, which shows how many English players play abroad when West Brom's former third choice keeper is in it.
You didn't have to tell me Jonathan Bond had gone to LA Galaxy. That is huge news in the transfer market. Ewan, it looks a familiar setting for you, so I'll just ask, how are you? Are you well?
I'm doing pretty well. Feeling a little bit homesick and wanting to be back near where Alex sits at the Baggies.
Yeah,
back at the shrine.
And I believe you have a beverage on hand, Ewan.
I've gone for a bit of Elvis juice.
Oh, very nice.
As you can see, yeah. Grapefruit infused IPA. It's very nice.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Ooh, not sure I'm a fan of the flavoured IPAs. Well, you've already plugged it now. So why would they get in touch saying we'll give you money to? Yeah. Apart from our massive following.
Alex, have you got a beverage that doesn't involve cordial this week?
I don't. I have a drink that is orange squash with no vodka in this week.
Nice.
What have you got, Gig?
This week. Thanks for asking. I've gone for the San Miguel again. I will mix it up. I am going back to the sunny shores of Merseyside this week, and then I'll be buying my own lager. So, you know, stay tuned to see what I'll be drinking next week, because that's the real one. I was thinking. I come to you from a plane, because as we record this episode, Thomas Tuchel is set to be on his way to Chelsea following the sacking of Frank Lampard. I don't think Thomas Tuchel flies jet too easy, but that was the best image I could find. That brings us on to our first talking point, really, the big one today. Frank Lampard has been sacked by Chelsea Football Club. This now takes Roman Abramovich to £110 million in manager compensation in his time at Chelsea. I don't think a lot of people are surprised by the sacking. Alex, I know you weren't a big Frankie Lampard fan. What were your thoughts on this one?
Before Alex's thoughts, I just want to congratulate Gig on that segue, because it was bloody good.
As soon as you like.
Yeah.
No edit needed.
Yeah. I feel bad for Fat Frank, but I think Tuchel will do a good job at Chelsea. He's the only other person you could really think of going for, really. Like, there's no one else.
There's Allegri as well.
But I think he's also someone who like might suit the English game a lot, and he he'll be the man after his knowledge in German football. I don't know, maybe that'll help Werner in some way. I'm also just happy to see Frank Lampard not be gassed up anymore, because he was so overrated. I hate the media, basically, and as soon as the media say someone's good, I don't think that they are. So, you know, now I actually think Frank Lampard was a class manager, and I don't know why he was sacked.
Anything to add? I assume you're pretty worried about Mason Mount's future now, if he's not getting that game time under Lampard.
Yeah, how many key passes is he going to get?
So, obviously the memes have been flying about Mason Mount's future. I don't think he's in too much trouble, though. He's been one of Chelsea's best players so far. And even if he's not in the long-term plans, I think based on recent form, he'd still be in the squad for any manager that comes in. But obviously with Tuchel's German connection, he might prefer to play Havertz and Werner over Mount. I think it's hard to feel sorry for Lampard when you take in the Chelsea job. You know what you're getting yourself into. You know if the results aren't up to scratch, then you're unlikely to stay around for long. I think it's a little bit short-sighted from the board. And I know in the Chelsea camp, by the hardcore fans, they are quite upset with the decision. And it might come around to bite the board on the back, so to say.
Yeah, with what you were saying there, Ewan, like I know what you mean with Frank Lampard. Like, I don't think he should have taken the job with the lack of experience he's got, which obviously like Tuchel's got. But then I think like you could probably see Chelsea like if Lampard maybe stays in management and does okay, you can maybe see him getting appointed again in like 10 years' time as Chelsea manager, and then getting like a second go at it almost, maybe when he's got a bit more experience, because all he had is that like one minorly successful year at Derby, and then he got the Chelsea job, which clearly it was, he's just out of his depth. But then they've got someone good in Tuchel, so to get someone in who's clearly got like Champions League experience. And I mean, apart from he won the title at PSG, didn't he? Which,
yeah, well, I mean, everyone wins.
You don't
the title
do
at
that,
PSG.
Yeah.
Champions League final last year, though, weren't they?
Yeah, like he's been fairly successful at big clubs, so I think he's got the experience. So I think he's definitely the man for the job.
I don't know. I think the problem. Yeah, so like a big thing with Tuchel is that every big club that he's been at, he's actually had like major problems with the board, and there's been falling outs. At Dortmund, there was falling outs with the board, and there was a bit of poor form in the Ligue 1. However, it was mainly because of his falling out with, is it Leonardo, the sporting director at PSG,
I believe.
I believe that's why he was sacked. And especially with such a volatile board that's ready to sack a manager at any point in Chelsea, I can't see him lasting that long. And I think it is a bit of a short-sighted. I would have ridden out at least the rest of the season with Lampard. And sort of, if you don't get Champions League football, it's something to build upon. And it is it obviously was a huge investment, but I don't know. I can see there being major problems with Tuch.
Yeah. No, I definitely agree with you there.
Yeah, I think I agree with a lot of what you're saying. He's obviously a top manager. I think it's tough on Lampard to say he shouldn't have taken the job, because that's a dream job. Why would you not take it?
Yeah.
Like, it's like you playing for West Brom all your career, Alex, like you dream about, and then someone offering you the job to the manager. You're not going to turn it down, are you?
No, true.
But yeah, it's a strange one. I don't know if Chelsea, because obviously they've been so successful with the sort of three-year manager policy, the hiring and firing. I don't know if Lampard was an attempt to move away from that, or whether they were just trying to deal with a transfer ban. But if it was an attempt to move away from that, it feels like they've sort of bottled it in a sense, because the first bad run of form Lampard's had, they've sacked him. I think he overperformed a little bit last year. And as Ewan said, I think that should have got him more time. In a very strange season, they're not that far off where they need to be. The only thing that worried me is the performances of the new signings, but I wouldn't necessarily put that down to Lampard. But yeah, Werner and Havertz have been way off it. But it'll be interesting to see how Tuchel lose.
Yeah.
I think like you look at the goals that Werner has missed, like the shot, well, not goals that he's missed, the goals he hasn't scored. There's been so many just clear-cut opportunities that he should have scored. And really, you look at that and you think, if he's got that, Chelsea are at least 6 points ahead. Obviously, it's hypothetical, but...
Yeah, and that's them in the Champions League, isn't it?
It's finishing that you expect a player like Werner. You expect any player to slot in a lot of the ones that he's missed, really. And so it's these big money signings that the board have done and them flopping that have been the demise of a legend at the club, really.
Yeah, I thought particularly when Werner was playing well, I think he scored 7 or 8 in a row in all competitions at one point. And even then he was missing some ridiculous chances. But yeah, like you say, it's difficult with Lampard. Like, you feel like a full Stamford Bridge would get behind him so much more, and he probably wouldn't be out of a job. I think Man U have done it in a similar sense. You hire a club legend because it allows them more time, because the fans aren't going to turn on them. But with behind closed doors football, that kind of goes out the window a little bit, yeah. But yeah, definitely one to keep an eye on.
Does that mean our general consensus is that it's a quite harsh sacking?
Yeah, I think so.
I think that's, yeah.
But it's also a Chelsea sacking.
Yeah.
Sacked a manager 2 months or 3 months after winning the Champions League. So
it wouldn't surprise me if it was like another manager of that caliber, but because they've got Lampard in, I was a little bit surprised by it. But yeah, sticking with the theme of poor form, but someone who I don't particularly think his job is in danger. Liverpool again, obviously lost to Burnley in midweek, 1-0, classic Sean Dyche performance. And then an improved performance at Old Trafford, but ultimately still succumbed to a late bit of Bruno Fernandes' magic and lost 3-2, so they're now at the FA Cup as well. Do you think maybe being at the FA Cup, Ewan, could help them? It was potentially a distraction. This will allow them to get their league form back on track before the Champions League starts again.
Sort of, but then you think about the FA Cup and you think, like, how many extra games is it? What, it would be like...
7, max, I think.
Yeah, it wouldn't be that many now. But there's extra time in this, which there wasn't in the Carabao, which could be potentially killer in a season like...
Yeah,
but Liverpool have never got past the fifth round under Klopp.
Yeah. Yeah, they've been knocked out at the fourth like 3 times and the third once, I think. Yeah, I think it could be potentially be avoiding that distraction. But then if you'd taken it from that perspective, then for a side like Liverpool, they really have to try and push on. And for it to still be a successful season, they need to be right up there in the league and be challenging for the Champions League. I think they're still, like, as an 11, one of the most dangerous teams in Europe and definitely could push far into the competition. I definitely don't think they're the favourites now with their form. But the expectation by fans and by the board, I'm sure, will be to be trying to get their hands on a trophy. And there's only 2 competitions they're left in now, which will be very hard for them to do.
See, I think there's been a change at Liverpool. Obviously, like, you keep going back to Van Dijk's out injured, but you can't just rest on your laurels with that kind of thing. Like, you've got to just take it. And the fact that there's not, like, they've not really sought to replace him at all over January, to my knowledge. Not really looked for a centre back, and they've been playing Fabinho and Matip or Henderson or Reece Williams, and it's clearly not working. And they've not got the mentality of, like, let's win the league again. They've not, like, Pop said, oh, I just want to qualify for Champions League. Like, to me, that's not good enough. That's not really... Like, I know you're having a tough season, but everyone's having a tough season. This is a year that they could go and do a double. Like, I don't see why he's saying, let's just qualify for Champions League. He's got the players there. And when I watched them against United, I only watched the second half. But that second goal, the equalising one, like, that was just Liverpool. That was how Liverpool normally play to me, like, over the last 2 years. And if they can do it, so maybe it's a mentality thing that Klopp's not got that, like, winner mentality anymore, if you know what I mean. It's more of like a, we'll just do what's acceptable, if you know what I mean.
I don't know. I feel like the top four statement is more to take the pressure off them. I think if he came out and said, we still want to win this league, the pressure that puts the players under after their recent form, I think it'd be really difficult to deal with.
Yeah, I sort of think, like, Klopp coming out and saying that, like, obviously you don't necessarily want to hear it as a fan, but as we all know, it's been a turbulent season at the best of times. And I think it's a little bit like we saw with Man City last year, where they just looked a little bit tired and sort of off what we're used to seeing from them. But I think, like, you've got to kind of get used to that when you've been playing with pretty much the same squad with barely any additions and pretty much the same 11 playing week in, week out. You're going to expect a dip in form, and Liverpool as a squad just look quite fatigued and quite tired.
But that's their fault.
Well, yeah, it's their fault, and maybe a little bit of poor management and not having the options there available. But I don't know, like, I feel like when you get used to winning and feeling like you should win every time, it's great, but it's kind of, you don't necessarily appreciate the times you win. And so it's like you have this little trough to come back and be stronger again. Like, obviously they won the title and it was great for them, but then after that, it's just been, oh, well, we need to match with Man U. We'll get 2-2 and, like, yeah, have that winning mentality. But, like, just also appreciate everything else going on in your club, and you're still getting to see one of the best teams in Europe all the time.
Yeah, I think we're also seeing how hard it is to go back to back. I know what you're saying, Alex, like they wouldn't need as big a point total this season, but ultimately, like a freak Man City team and a couple of brilliant Alex Ferguson teams is something that's not done very often. I did always feel when they're playing at their best, there was still this over-reliance on Van Dijk. And I know he's a brilliant, brilliant player. And he's obviously going to be a huge loss. But I do feel like it stems from the defensive solidarity he gives them. Like the fullbacks aren't able to push up as much now. And fullbacks are the ones that create the chances for them. But no, it's a strange one. I still think they're much too good a team. And they've got too good a manager to not finish in the Champions League, really. But I don't know, Man City, has, by their standards, a pretty average 2020 after their success. We could maybe see that with Liverpool after two brilliant seasons, really.
Yeah, that's true. Because in that year that City won the league, it's like any other year Liverpool would have won the league.
Yeah, and they won the Champions League. Yeah.
They're in the top 5 points totals of all time in the Premier League that season.
Yeah.
It was two teams battling it out to the end to the highest of levels.
Yeah, I think it'll be a long time before we see like another title race like that. Like, although it was close, sort of last 10 games, I always felt like Man City would win it just because neither team looked like dropping points.
Yeah, and it was like they just had the 2 points on them.
Yeah, moving on a slightly more light-hearted note, Dimitrovic, Ibar goalkeeper, in case you didn't know, scored a penalty for his team earlier this week. Sometime, I'm not quite sure.
It was Thursday.
Yeah. How do we feel about this? Is this the start of a new tactic, maybe?
I'll let Ewan shoot first.
I thought it was absolutely bonkers, but I think the mind games played is also incredible. Yeah. Ibar had some penalty problems, and before the game, their manager had said, if we get a penalty, Dimitrovic, you're on it. So in the 12th minute against the best side in La Liga at the moment, they decided to really chance it, take their keeper up to go take the penalty. And it did pay off. He scored.
He banged it in.
It was a good penalty.
Was
it Oblak he was against?
Yeah.
Yeah. Powered it into the corner, man.
I think it's something fans have absolutely been loving. Ibar and everyone, even if that happened against you, you'd kind of be like, fair play. Like, yeah. I kind of just rate the balls on it. So yeah, it's just one of those funny things that you don't expect to happen, but I'm very glad that it did.
Yeah, me too. Although maybe could you see it as like a little bit of a disrespect to all your outfield players, especially your strikers.
Yeah, but if they've been missing, and penalty's such a psychological thing, you might as well.
Yeah,
I mean, GKs are a bit wacky. Like, might as well bring someone in who backs himself. I mean, I wouldn't leave my goal open for it, but.
Well, David James always said he could have played up front in for England. So, you know, clearly they've all got talent on the ball.
I've just checked the La Liga table, and quite a bonkers thing about it is that it's not like Ibar are safe from relegation or anything. They're 2 points off the relegation zone. And I think before that game... They lost it, but they were only 1 point off relegation. There has been another game since. So they were 1 point off relegation and let their goalie take a penalty in the 12th minute.
There is an enormous amount of bollocks on that manager and that keeper.
Yeah, so sticking with the theme of Spain, Real Madrid have continued with their charitable donations to Arsenal. They've allowed Martin Odegaard to go on loan for the rest of the season. Obviously, he was a bit of a... got a few headlines when he first moved to Real Madrid. I think he was 16 at the time. He got paid an awful lot of money to go there. And it maybe unsurprisingly didn't really work out for him to begin with, but he was really good for Sociedad last year, I believe, and has started to push into the... pushing to the first team at Real Madrid now. So, Ewan, what do you make of this signing?
Yeah, I think it's really good signing for Arsenal. I think it gives them what they need, that creative spark of attacking midfield, linking up the defensive midfield to the attack. Obviously, they've got Saka and Emile Smith-Rowe that will probably do a somewhat similar job. However, I think having extra players, and especially someone of Odegaard's quality, will definitely do bits for them. I know, obviously, he was 16, and if you're 16 starting in a Real Madrid side, especially at that time, was I think it was when they got the three Champions Leagues on the bounce. Like, it would have been, like, ridiculous for a 16-year-old to have been starting in there. So it's sort of expected that he's had a few loans. He's done well in these loans, and especially for Sociedad last year. I know he did particularly well, was one of their best players. I don't quite know why he's not really playing much for Madrid, but I think it's a really good deal for Arsenal.
I think like you say, it's a depth one. The form of Emile Smith Rowe, they probably will stick with him starting, but if they do lose him for whatever reason, it's nice to have that other option. Alex, anything to add on this one?
Not much. I think like you said it almostly. I mean, that Smith Rowe form probably isn't going to carry on all season, and then it is going to have to be a case of just rotation and someone else who can do pretty much a similar job. As Ewan said, he's sort of proven himself now in the men's game, they say. it's a decent signing. It's not one that's going to get Arsenal fans off their seats, but it's also quite hard to make signings right now that are going to do that. So yeah, I wouldn't complain if I was an Arsenal fan.
For me, I'd say it's a brilliant signing. Like, I think as an Arsenal fan, I'd be really excited about it. I'd expect Odegaard to be starting most games. I think he is, like, genuinely a quality player.
Yeah, I think he's better than Smith Rowe. I just think like the form Smith Rowe has been in, it'd be difficult to drop.
Yeah.
I'm not too sure about if Odegaard can play other positions as well, like out on the left or the right. But now, obviously, like, things are looking up for him. I think he went to Heerenveen, is it, on loan, and he didn't really pull up any trees there, but then he improved at Vitesse and obviously Sociedad. I think Arsenal will be pleased with this one. Anytime you get a player from Real Madrid, it's a positive, I think. They've also got Matt Ryan in on loan from Brighton. Any thoughts on this one, Alex?
Matt Ryan now, he's not played the last few games because they've had that Sanchez playing. I'm pretty sure he's third choice. I don't even think he was on the bench for the last few games. So it's what I find weird about it is that if he's third choice for Brighton, I mean, he's obviously not going to come in as first choice over Leno, but, like, and I know that Redison didn't play that well, but even so, like, as a second choice, if he's third choice for Brighton, he can't be good enough. The only thing I'd say is that he is an Arsenal fan, I think, like, growing up. I think I saw a few tweets about it when he joined, stuff that he tweeted when he was a lot younger. So he's probably really buzzing about it. But I think it's a bit of a nothing signing, really. And not a lot's going to happen. And maybe that's the whole point of it, just someone for a bit more depth.
It's clearly for a better second-choice goalie and someone that can probably push Leno. I think before the start of this season, Matt Ryan was talked about as a pretty good Premier League quality goalkeeper. I think he's pretty solid, and I think he could push Leno a bit.
Oh, yeah, I don't know. I think that'd be, he'd have to really do well in, like, a cup game to do that.
I don't know. I think the way, like, the position Brighton are in, they're not going to be taking too many risks. I don't think they're going to want to bring him back in if they dropped him for poor form, unless Sanchez was in terrible form, if you know what I mean. So maybe it's good for him to go somewhere different, get sort of, not his career back on track, but get back into form.
And
certainly worse places to do it than Arsenal. Like I say, I think I thought he was a very solid Premier League goalkeeper before this season.
I think everyone did, to be fair.
Yeah, I think it's harsh on Ronaldo in a way because he's only played the one game. But if they literally think that's, he's not up to it already, then it's decent for him. And especially with the Europa League, if they've got to go to Belarus on a Thursday night and they don't want to be starting Leno, then maybe they want someone better in goal. You can kind of see it. It's not a groundbreaking signing, but it's a useful one, and you don't want to run out of goalies because then you'll concede quite a lot of goals. So
we just have an extra defender.
He was Brighton's first choice for a good couple of years, wasn't
he? He was first choice at the start of the season.
Until, like, December of this year, pretty much, I think.
Yeah. A bit earlier than that, I think. But, yeah, he just had a huge dip in form. Yeah, the Brighton fans are pretty happy to see the back of him, I think, for at least the brief period.
I don't know. These Brighton fans that you talk of seem to be...
Well, I look at a lot of Brighton Twitter as well. Well, I mean, I do say it's a bit rich because this is realistically the best that Brighton are ever going to be.
Yeah, but... they're saying that, you know, especially the Potter outers and stuff.
But oh, yeah, they're ridiculous.
You've even got Klopp outers and there were Fraudiolas at the start of the season as well. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, sticking with the theme of loans, Willem Jose has gone to Wolves, on loan from Real Sociedad. Obviously, they've been crying out for a striker. They were linked with Diego Costa, but I think they didn't really want to pay his wages, which is fair enough. Don't know too much about Jose. He's got 40 goals in his last 115 games in La Liga, for one of the better sides in the league. But yeah, maybe, is this like... Do you think, Alex, this is like as good as you can get in a January transfer window for an emergency sort of?
I think it's as good as you can get in a January transfer window during COVID times. And I mean, from what I know about him, which granted is very little, he doesn't seem a bad player. I think he's played in Europe a little bit as well with Sociedad. So, you know, he's got
played in the
that
Europa
experience.
League a bit.
Yeah,
So, you know, he's clearly like going to be of a decent caliber. Wolves obviously need a striker. I don't know if he suits their style of play or anything like that. But yeah, I think it's just the best that they can do. And to be honest, they desperately need a striker because as much as I think Fabio Silva will be quite a decent player, and there you just show glimpses of it, he just isn't good enough to... Like, it's not unreasonable to say that if Wolves like form doesn't pick up much, like they're in a relegation battle. Because anyone in the bottom half of the table, I would say, is in a relegation battle to some extent.
And ultimately,
because you go five games. And
ultimately, they've scored so much for goals as well.
Exactly.
I think, was it two set pieces against West Brom? Or
It was a throw-in and two penalties.
No, that they scored.
Oh, yeah. Corner and a free kick, I think.
Yeah, I think they put three past Brighton, but that was a set piece, a penalty and an own goal. So yeah,
I just wanted to point out that we scored more goals than Wolves because we beat them after they waited for 9 years to beat us, and we still beat them.
Yeah,
sorry.
The crowd goes wild.
Point that out again.
But yeah, just we'll just keep digging at water a bit. Raúl Jiménez, despite being out for the last couple of months, is still their joint top scorer on four goals. So that tells you how much they need a striker.
Who else is it? Is it Bolly or?
It could be really Bolly. It won't be Adama, I'll tell you that. Pedro Neto, maybe?
It's Jimenez and Pedro Neto.
Yeah, that was pretty great. Yeah, they also recalled Patrick Catrone from loan.
He was really bad, though, when he in his first game.
No rhyme intended, but, you know, I can't help it. but, yeah, I think he was recalled. He wasn't particularly getting played at Fiorentina. I don't think Nuno sees a great deal in him, but I don't know. I've heard of him. Not Willem Jose, so, and he's still only 23, so it feels like he might have a future of the club, but obviously Nuno doesn't seem to see much in him.
We'll wait and see, eh?
Yeah. But yeah, sticking with the Black Country.
The better side of it, though, this time.
West Ham, they've... no, that was a joke. West Brom and West Ham could both face sanctions, I believe, over the negotiations of Robert Snodgrass's contract after his recent signing to West Brom. Essentially, there was a clause in it that didn't allow Robbie Snods to play against West Ham about a week or so ago. And apparently that's not allowed, would you believe it?
No,
Alex,
it's
I believe
not.
You've
I've
been
got...
doing some digging.
Yeah. So Allardyce admitted to it. sorry. Allardyce did admit to that because apparently it was the only way we'd get the deal done. And it is in the Premier League rule handbook, rule 17. And the rule states, no club shall enter into a contract which enables any other party to that contract to acquire the ability materially to influence its policies or the performance of its team in league matches. So basically, another club can't say who you're going to play, which is... what West Brom allowed to do and what West Ham instigated. I think that both clubs probably should face some sort of sanction, whether it be a fine or a deduction of points, which I really hope it's not a deduction of points. And I'm saying this from a very unbiased perspective.
Yeah, West Ham might go down to ninth.
They could take away the West Ham versus West Brom game, and
that'd be all right. That'd benefit our goal difference a little bit.
Yeah, but if Snodgrass had played, you would want 8-2, so you know you should get the points.
Yeah, really. I think the thing is, like, they should sanction both sides because it sets a precedent. If they don't, that clubs will start doing this, and it, at the end of the day, it is wrong. Like, he's not your player anymore. You shouldn't decide whether or not he plays. And I think another thing that's important is that, I'm just saying this to defend my own club. West Ham basically said this is the only way you're getting him. So we were kind of forced into it. And it's like, if you need the player, just take the player. Do you know what I mean?
From what I've heard, the option for West Brom was you can take him now, which would have meant he can play against Wolves, or you can, but you can't play him against us, or you can just take him after our game's over. So
yeah.
They were saying, like, basically, yeah, you're not playing him against us. You can either have him now if you make sure he doesn't play against us. I think, was it an Allardyce slip then that's unravelled?
No, it was a clause in the contract, because the thing is,
there was a genuine clause.
Supposedly, yeah,
and it's not like the manager is, like, generally the man in charge of negotiations anyway.
Yeah, well, but the thing is, David Moyes has done this before. I found this out. There was no sanctions, as it was a gentleman's agreement.
What I would have thought. This, why would you not just have a gentleman's agreement?
Well, but maybe it's because this was Tim Howard after Man United had let him go to Everton. I'm assuming it was David Moyes. I couldn't actually quite find the exact thing, but I think it was Ferguson and Moyes, which would make sense.
Those two are always at it.
Well. But it would also maybe make sense of them getting out of it, because, you know, big clubs, they never like to sanction them, do they? But I think that... I think the rumour is that there was a genuine clause in the contract saying Snodgrass won't play against West Ham, which is then when it gets murky waters.
I was going to say, if it's an actual Allardyce slip of the tongue, it's made a bit of a habit of that, especially with the England and after taking that job, admitting to, well, explaining how you can break FA rules and regulations.
Yeah, he's a bit of a bloke, though, isn't he?
Yeah, he is a bit of a bloke. With all due respect to West Brom, Snodgrass hasn't been a regular feature for West Ham, and West Ham obviously been having a really good season. I don't get what their benefit would be out of Snodgrass playing against them. If you know what I mean, I don't see about they're going to, like, why would they want that clause? I don't see what massive advantage they're getting from it.
He is still a good player, do you know what I mean? And they must have they just probably don't want to take the risk of, we sold you, then you play us 2 weeks later or whatever, against us. It's like,
it'll be, that's embarrassing, and it'll be forgotten about in a couple of days, you know what I mean? It's not going to be a good difference between them going down. Yeah, it's a really dodgy owners.
Well, to be fair, so we have them as well, but you know what I mean. West Ham with the Sullivans, is it? And the
Sullivan and Gold.
Yeah, but, you take
any little sort of advantage you can get, and from their perspective, it's like, okay, well, we will sell you this player, but we'll either not sell you him until you've played us, so you don't get any advantage of it, or you can have him before that, but he can't play against us, like. Yeah, but I know what you're saying about it. It's not like a huge advantage, but then it's just like, it's just like as West Ham, like, there's no point in that. You either just hold off the transfer or you allow it, but say, yeah, don't play him against us. But
I do think it's strange, because obviously, like, you can't play a lone player against his parent club, but there's still ways around that. I think Chelsea got Atletico in the Champions League once, and Atletico had Courtois, and they paid like 5 or 6 million for him to be able to play. It was such a big game. But no, it's definitely a strange one, and want to think about over the next few days before our next podcast comes out. But yeah, that just about concludes our talk for today. We'll be back for a roundup of this game week coming up. Tottenham, Liverpool, the biggie. Will Allardyce put another masterclass on at Man City? Who knows? But anything we want to add before we depart?
No. I think that was a lovely gig.
Thanks, man.
No worries.
Be sure to interact with it. If you're watching on YouTube, like and subscribe. Comment if you really like.
Tell your friends. Tell your friends.
Tell
your friends. Just tell one, but they have to tell one as well.
We are now on Spotify as well. So if that's your preferred listening platform, feel free to listen to us on that. And Pocket Casts and Anchor and Apple Podcasts. link to the old social medias will be down in the bio. Ewan is continuing to absolutely bang out TikTok content. I put funny tweets out. And then we occasionally do the Instagram as well. So stay tuned for that.
Alex, I put funny tweets out as well. I put funny tweets out sometimes.
Subjective.
I just want to say good luck to Tuchlum in his first game against Wolves for Chelsea.
Too coolly should be all right, yeah.
Yeah, Tommy T's always been a good manager, to be fair. But yeah, thank you very much for watching. Peace and love. Keep it real.
Thanks, Tuchel.